Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Have you ever noticed how those with a British accent sound smarter? Now, that's a thing. I mean, I looked it up. It's in Psychology Today. Here's the headline. Why do British accents sound intelligent to Americans? Right or wrong, we all make social judgments based on accents. It says, right or wrong, we use the information that accents provide to make social judgments. Accents can provide clues to geography, which then fuels biased decision-making. We make both positive and negative assumptions about socioeconomic status, intelligence, and personality that might not be grounded in statistical reality. In other words, accents feed stereotypes. A French accent makes you sound haughty and highbrow in the eyes of many. However, that same voice may be an advantage if you're interviewing for positions in the fashion world or culinary arts. British accents conjure stereotypes of high IQ and competence, while Brooklyn and Southern accents get lower ratings or on intelligence. This is not necessarily consistent with actual IQ scores, but the perception persists just the same. Look, I share all of that by way of introduction to our special guest this week. He's a dear friend. He hails from London. He's also the founder and CEO of Glint, a powerful fintech company that makes gold money again. And he has an amazing British accent. He's earned his IQ with me. He's proven it over and over. He sounds really smart, and he is really smart. Welcome, Jason Cousins, to Pirate Money Radio.
Hi, Kevin. I couldn't have hoped for a better introduction than that.
Well, you know, you do. You've got that James Bond. And I know that the British accents, we lump them all together, and they all sound, but they're very different. They're very distinctive. If you're in London, you can tell where someone's from, right?
Absolutely, unless you cut the Queen's English, of course.
Unless you've got the Queen's,
The King's English now.
The King's English now. Well, most of your life.
God rest our former Queen.
Yes. All right, so who is Jason Cousins? Tell us about your life in jolly old England, what it was like growing up, who you are, because I think you've got a fascinating story. I like to compare you to, as Elon Musk is to electric vehicles and Tesla, Jason Cousins is to transactional gold and silver that's coming to America. So what was it like? Tell us about your life.
Well, it all starts for me in a place called Sunderland, which is the northeast of England. And my family actually, very much a working class family. My mother was a hairdresser. My grandfather was a master bricklayer. My father worked for Shell Oil. And he worked. He came up to the northeast because back then vibrant shipbuilding area. You know, lots of maritime engineering going on there. He met my mother, and so yeah. But of course, there was a decline in the whole shipbuilding and maritime industry. There was a big decline in the coal mining industry, and the northeast of England lost a lot of its luster. And hasn't really, I don't think, got it back. But because my father worked for Shell, you know, he was away at sea 11 months of the year.
Really?
Yeah. Didn't really see much of him when I was younger. I used to call my uncle Daddy because that's what everybody else, all my cousins were calling him that. But you can imagine that was quite a strain on the family. And eventually he said, look, Mr. Shell, I need a land-based job. And they gave him the opportunity of going to Nigeria. And the schools over there weren't very good for Englishmen. And so they offered that they would put me and my brother into a boarding school. And in fact, a wonderful school ended up being called Ampleforth, which is a monastic school, Benedictine monastic school, one of the top Catholic schools in the world. And so I went from, well, first of all, we didn't end up in Nigeria because my father had a passport stamp from South Africa. He never actually laid his a foot in South African soil, but he'd...
And so they wouldn't let him in.
They wouldn't let him in because it was at the time, it was the...
Apartheid.
Anti-apartheid movement. And we ended up in the Caribbean, or they did anyway, and I was sent off to boarding school, but which had its own challenges for me as an individual. It made me... robust. It gave me the ability to deal with challenges, and look after myself, so to speak.
Did it open up doors and new relationships you might not have had?
I don't think, I mean, there is this always this perception when you go to a kind of top school like that, that you enter some kind of magic network. But I think for me, the main thing was about learning was about resilience.
And discipline.
Discipline. And also the one thing it gave me was the ability, that the belief that I could achieve anything I put my mind to. And that, whether that, you know, the school was excellent in that regard, whether it was you wanting to play the cello, be an artist, a physicist, or yet did I know a fintech.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge, because if you grow up in a situation where you don't think that you'll ever get out of your circumstance, we see that with inner cities here, I'll never get out of it. The only way out of it is to deal drugs or to be an athlete, and I'm not very good at sports, and therefore, you know, I mean, that's terrible. But what you saw was, no, the human spirit and human capability, and realized that you had the potential to think beyond your background.
Yeah, and, you know, I was quite connected as well to the faith side of the school, which is unusual because most of the boys weren't. But faith is important as well, the belief in yourself as well, as much as anything else. Anyway, from there, I went on to study architecture at university, architecture of buildings. Now, I'm not talking about software engineering architecture.
Right.
And then worked in Hong Kong for a couple of years before pivoting into virtual reality the first time it was cool.
But you love architecture. I've been with you. We've been traveling, and you'll look at the building, and you'll have admiration for it, or you'll say, "Well, they should have done this different." I've watched that. That's ingrained in who you are.
Yeah.
And you know that's if you're to pick the great professions, architecture would be one that you'd always put up there, you know, very highly.
Well, Ayn Rand wrote a book. I haven't actually read that one, but I've read Atlas Shrugged. But she's also written one about an architect, I think, hasn't she?
Yeah.
Look, it was a fantastic education. And actually, it prepared me for this emerging explosion of this digital ecosystem, this internet. And so although I got involved in virtual reality, which you can see was a natural progression from architecture, I then soon pivoted my company into building some of the first e-commerce systems for some of the top high street retailers. And actually, you know, I never would have guessed, but actually architecture, it was a perfect education, because now I was hiring teams of software engineers instead of structural engineers.
Right.
And the processes for design and understanding and how you build something like an e-commerce site were the same kind of, I used the tools from my education in architecture and applied them to this digital ecosystem, which was fascinating.
100 years ago, as an architect, you could design and build the retail outlet. And what you just did was build a virtual version of that.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, for whatever reason, I've always been interested in the next important thing to do. So, you know, obviously it was virtual reality. That was a bit ahead of its time. Then it was e-commerce. And then, of course, so that was the world I was in, this digital ecosystem. And I was, you know, 2008 hit.
Yeah. 2008 hit. Well, we're going to get to that. I don't want to leave this whole notion, though. We've got a guy with a cool British accent here talking on Pirate Money Radio. One question I have to ask, I know we'll take a break in just a minute, but what is it? You live in London. What's the thought of America when you get together? What's the thought? I know it's got to be, look at those crazy Americans, but what do people think?
No, I think the most important impression of the United States for me is this place which really fosters and encourages innovation and entrepreneurship. And going back to what I said about my education, this belief that anything can be achieved. And, you know, you very graciously compared me to Elon Musk, but what an amazing achievement, you know, a man who's able to create electric cars and not, you know, out of nowhere, the whole supply chain, everything, spaceships are going to go to Mars, and the list goes on, robots, artificial intelligence. And that could only really have happened in America.
Only in America. Well, and we look and we see that the average American doesn't see the great future for his kids that they once did. So we've got to revitalize that in America. And the good news is something you developed in London is going to help us bring that back. Individual liberty and a great future for our children and our grandchildren. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Jason Cousins from London.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, and our special guest, live from London. He actually came here, flew in from London just a couple of yesterday or day before, and he came into our Pirate Money Radio studios. And I've known Jason for a while. We've gotten to know each other quite well in a very short period of time. In fact, we dined together with Nigel Farage not long ago. And you know, Nigel Farage, that's a big movement in England. There's political things going on. Tell us about that and what it was like meeting Nigel.
Yeah, I mean, I think like in lots of parts of the world, there's a polarization going on between the left and the right. And if we look, though, at what happened during COVID, my personal opinion is that whoever was in power during COVID were going to get kicked out. And of course, that happened with Trump over here, didn't it? And the Biden administration got in.
And then it happened to Biden right after that, yeah, because he was...
Yeah. Yeah. But of course, the conservatives in the UK were in power. And of course, you know, after COVID, they were just in the way that the re-election process happens. It happened later than here, but eventually, of course, the Tories or the Conservatives, as you might call them, got kicked out, and we're now with a Labour government. But I mean, I think there's a huge amount of challenges in all countries, not just in the UK. They're all very, very similar all around the planet. We're dealing with a situation where you know, the magic money tree, you know, undisciplined money creation, thin printing of money out of thin air, in my view, has led to all kinds of challenges throughout society. You know, the US and the British debt, you know, each country has a problem with debt because, of course, we've all been able to print money. And this has led to a moral hazard that doesn't just affect our economy, but also affects society itself, I think.
Well, jumping on that, it absolutely affects society itself. We looked at since 1971, when Richard Nixon left the gold standard, we see birth rates have declined. We've seen household formation has declined. We've seen more two earners in a household because one earner wasn't sufficient. And that's led to a demographic problem. And the demographic problem has led to an immigration issue. And an immigration issue has led to immigration problems and crime and various other things that are associated with it. It all comes down eventually to money. And there are only three things you can do with your money. You can give it, you can spend it, or you can invest it. Here at Pirate Money Radio, we work to explain solutions that support all three areas in a way that promotes liberty, security, and values. Patriot Mobile, it's a mobile phone company. They support the Pirate Money Radio program. Patriot Mobile uses U.S. carriers, including AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile. It operates on both Apple and Android phones. More information about the Economic War Room, our sister program, and Patriot Mobile is available at piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. That's piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. And we're talking about money from a biblical standpoint. I want to give you Proverbs 20:10. This is from the New King James. Diverse weights and diverse measures, they are both alike an abomination to the Lord. That means that if your money is not fairly treated, everybody's not treated the same by money. It's a diverse weight or a diverse measure, and that is an abomination to God. There's really a moral hazard here.
Yeah,
right?
And I think everybody feels it, but no one understands it. And even when I start to describe it, people don't really get it. It takes them a good couple of minutes to really think about it and the penny to drop.
Well, you know, from my time working with Wall Street firms, I can show you 100, maybe 1,000 ways to hedge your money against inflation, to where wealthy people have the opportunity that they can invest in such a way to benefit from inflation. But you talk to the average shopkeeper or the average worker, and you'll find, no, they're all harmed by it.
Yeah.
You explained the Cantillon effect. Can you share a little bit about what that means and how it works?
There's Kevin using the French accent, of course, make him sound sexy.
but actually, as I opened up, it makes you sound haughty. And so, all right, give me the British version.
Well, listen.
He's an Irish-French economist, give me the Irish version.
Yeah, I'm very impressed with your command of the French language. And Cantillon, I used to say Cantillon. I'm going to start using Cantillon as well. The Cantillon effect. Look, it describes how money, the effect of how what happens when money is printed or created out of thin air, when it doesn't have any backing, doesn't have any constraints, and it if you kind of sum it up, it's those closest to the money supply benefit disproportionately from those furthest away.
Okay, so who's closest to the money supply?
Ultimately, the government is. And the government has now, since we came off a gold standard where, you know, previously, you know, gold had been had been money for thousands of years, going back as early as 5,000 years ago. And of course, gold was money up until 1971 when Nixon took us off the gold standard.
And let me just pause there, because Bretton Woods, we came to an agreement, global agreement, all the major Western nations of the world who'd won, the winners from World War II, came together and said, all right, U.S. economy was the least harmed by this war in Europe and is in the best position, so we're going to let the U.S. dollar, but you have to back your dollars, and they were backed at that time by 40%.
Yeah.
40 cents on every dollar, 40 cents worth of gold. And then 1971, the French, the haughty French, c'est la vie. They came and they took, they asked to have their gold given back.
Yeah,
that was Charles de Gaulle.
There's a great YouTube video, you can watch it, and it's de Gaulle at the United Nations saying, you know, I don't trust you Americans because I think you're printing more money than you have gold.
Right.
And so they were sailing their Navy ships into New York and exchanging those dollars, because governments could do that, even though individuals were banned from owning gold, of course. Governments could exchange their dollars for gold because it really just was a certificate to say, you know, this is backed by gold. And of course, you know, it's the temptation that every government always has throughout history. It's always happened that at some point, governments are spending have unsustainable debts. And at the time, of course, the Americans had the Vietnam War. And they were printing more dollars than they had gold. And so, here were the French exchanging it for gold. So Fort Knox was just going down. We don't to this day know how much gold's in there, which is why President Trump and Elon Musk were recently calling for an audit, weren't they?
Yeah, and they're not calling for an audit, which scares me a little bit. All right, but then you go back. So the government wins. If you print a bunch of money, the government wins because they can buy stuff out of thin air. They create money and buy stuff. So they win. Who else wins?
The magic money tree. And it creates all kinds of unsustainable initiatives and political promises that they've given to the electorate.
Right.
But the next group of people to benefit are the bankers themselves. And the bankers, of course, are able to make a lot of money from selling this fake money, this money that's created.
And they're not even printing it anymore. Now it's just created on a computer as a one or a zero.
Yeah, if you want to talk about accents, I'm not quite sure what a Roman accent would have sounded like, but you know, ex nihilo is the term for out of nothing. And literally, when you go in the bank now and you ask for a loan, they don't lend you the money that other people have deposited in the bank. No. That's the deposit base. They lend out up to five times as much money that has been deposited in the bank. Let's just think about that. Money is put in the bank, say $100. They can lend out $500. Where does that come from? Out of thin air.
Assume you're not going to show up and I want my $100 back.
Yeah, they do. And so, therefore, there is no money in the bank, effectively. And it's all a big Ponzi scheme. And so, you know, that was something that I came to realize back in 2008, that there, you know, the bank is by far, it is not a risk-free deposit of funds.
That's
the banks.
Yeah, no, there's no question. I want to be careful here because fortunately we do have an FDIC that does have insurance. We do have banks, and yes, they understand about how often people are going to come and get their money, and so they have lending standards associated. So we have very few runs on the banks, and when we do, the federal government has stepped in, and banks are still necessary. I use banks and all that. So when you use the term Ponzi scheme, it's a very legal.
Yeah, sorry, I was being a bit flippant with my words there. But you know, they serve a useful process in society. But we've got to understand what is going on in our monetary system.
That's true. If you put money in the bank, it's not your money anymore. All of a sudden, you have a credit claim against the bank. They owe you that money back, and they're very good at it. You know, I've lived all my life, and not one bank that I've had has ever gone bust. But they do go bust occasionally, and we do have a system for protecting that.
And that's why you need this FDIC insurance. It's because there is no money there, because you need the insurance, Whereas, you know, we'll come on to that maybe later with gold. It's in a vault, it's stored, it's safe, it's there. But the next group of people, of course, to benefit from this monetary system are the richest in society, the richest companies, the richest individuals, the high net worths. They don't find it hard to borrow money. In fact, during COVID in Germany, the interest rates were negative. And so companies, the biggest companies, were being paid to borrow billions of dollars from the bank. Can you imagine that? No. Can you imagine walking into the bank
and saying, give me money and pay me for taking it for you. Yes.
And so this is what I'm starting to talk about now, the further away you are from the monetary system, the creation of the money, the least you benefit from that. And so you get to the point where, you know, back in Sunderland, where I was born into a working class family, you know, you struggle to be able to borrow money. And
they only lend it to those who don't need it. That's it. That's the old joke. And the funny thing about that is that the further you are away, you still deal with the inflation impact that comes from creating this extra money, but you don't have the money to deal with it. So the prices go up immediately when all the money's created. Those close to the money supply, they benefit from it. They can profit from it. But those further away from the money supply, they're harmed by it because prices go up.
Yeah. And you know, I think it's important when you try and go back to the political system you're talking about in the UK, you see it in the US and other countries as well, where everybody from both sides of the aisle are trying to understand what to do about the challenges we're facing, about inflation, about rising costs of goods, about the effect that has on society, about the erosion of the middle class. And because they don't really understand this, they're all coming up with the wrong solutions. And for instance, one of the ideas is that capitalism doesn't work. Capitalism work because look how unfair society is.
Right.
What they don't realize is that actually it isn't capitalism that's the problem. It's the fuel on which it runs. It is the money that is corrupt, not capitalism. Capitalism is about hardworking people. You know, that's about, you know, that hard work gives you joy, gives you a purpose, and it should be embraced. But the problem is that it's not a level playing field. It's the have-nots versus the have-yots. How many times maybe in your career or right now you're feeling that no matter how hard you swim towards the beach, you can't get any closer towards it? You know, the current is going against you. Meanwhile, those on the yachts are sailing in no problem. That's the problem we're facing. And if people could understand that, we'd be some way to understanding how to fix the problems we've got. You know, the tech bros in Silicon Valley, etc., they are very bright. They're very intelligent people. But their success doesn't just come down to their intelligence. They've had a hose pipe of money pumped at them for the last 20 years. And that has definitely contributed to their success.
And that's where you get the Barack Obama saying as president, you didn't build that. We as all of society built that. Well, actually, we don't want to denigrate the entrepreneur. The entrepreneur is absolutely essential to free market capitalism, the growth, the success that we have. At the same time, we need to realize we've given them an unfair advantage because we have an unfair monetary system. We're going to be talking with Jason Cousins from Glint about this right after this break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, and I'm joined by Jason Cousins, who's got the incredible British accent that makes him sound so smart, and he is that smart. He really is. He's got the IQ to match the beautiful British accent. And when we started, we talked about in Psychology Today how a French accent makes you sound haughty. And, you know, it's good for if you're going to be in fashion design or whatever. And, you know, of course, the French people can be just as smart as anybody else on earth. The IQ is not determined by the accent that you use. But nevertheless, we have these perceptions. And I'm going to take advantage of that perception because right before the break, Jason was explaining how the wealth gap has created solutions that don't solve the problem. And so what we've done is we've created Band-Aids that cause more problems. So inflation is bad. Let's print more money and give people more money, and you create more inflation. That's a problem. And in France, there was an Irish-French economist, Richard Cantillon. He wrote about the Cantillon effect. It was published after he died, which is interesting, but it was prescient. It was portending the horrible future that France was about to face. And I'm going to read this. The haughty French. No, I'm just kidding about the haughty part. But the French monetary policy contributed to the revolution, the French Revolution, through years of fiscal mismanagement, excessive national debt, and the failed solution of issuing vast amounts of paper money. to resolve financial crises. This led to hyperinflation, eroding the value of savings and wages, skyrocketing prices for essential goods like bread, and breakdown of economic and social stability, ultimately fueling popular discontent against the monarchy. But the people closest to the king, they made out big time until they lost their heads because society failed. We're seeing this happen in New York right now. Mamdani saying the wealth gap is big, so let's abandon capitalism. We want state-run grocery stores. We want rent controls. We want, you know, free money, free buses, free education, free all of this. And in essence, he's taking us down a socialist pathway if he gets elected mayor in America's most historically important capitalist city. And that's a dangerous thing. We have a better solution. We talk about it all the time. We call it pirate money. And pirate money is to go back to gold and silver as a standard. So you can't create, God creates money in this case. The central bank doesn't create it. It cannot be created by a government. God creates money, and they use money as a useful standard. It's an honest weight and measure. And we're talking with a guy who actually, separately from what my work on this, where I was saying we got to do this and we wanted to get laws passed to enable it, he went out and built the technology that makes it possible. He is the Elon Musk of transactional gold, as Elon Musk is to electric cars or to affordable space travel, if that's a thing, and it's soon to be a thing. Jason Cousins is to transactional gold. He's an architect by training, but he's created a fintech that is absolutely amazing. It's something you can do right now to get on your own personal gold and silver standard. And in fact, he's been a supporter of this program. Here's the read. Glint is a financial technology service offering a debit card and mobile app that enables users to access their gold holdings for everyday purchases. With Glint, users maintain ownership of allocated physical gold, which is stored in a managed vault. At the time of a transaction, gold is sold in real time to cover the purchase amount in local currency. Glint offers an alternative way to store and use the value, combining gold and silver with modern payment infrastructure. Glint clients can monitor their gold balance, view transaction history, manage their account through the Glint app available on major mobile platforms. More details about how vaulted physical gold can be used as money are available at glintpay.com/gold247. Again, that's glintpay.com/gold247. Glint providing access to gold for modern spending. And Jason, I went with you. We walked into one of the leading grocers in America and walked in and bought a bag of oranges together. Do you remember that?
I do.
And I pulled out my gold coin and said, I want to buy these. And there was no place to put the gold coin. Nobody would sell them to us. They wouldn't go on camera rejecting the gold coin, but they said, no, you can't pay with that. And then I turned and I used my Glint card. I paid with gold.
Yeah, you came up with a great phrase I'm using a lot, actually. I think you said, bought with gold, paid with Glint.
That's exactly right. Explain how you got to build Glint and how it operates today. Go very short on how you got there, because I don't really know how Elon built the first electric car, but I know people drive them and love them, and now self-driving cars are a thing. Yeah. So how did you get the idea, and then how does it practically work?
So a lot of you might remember the 2008 financial crisis. I was sat in front of the TV watching the BBC talk about how the fact we were on the brink of complete collapse of the entire financial payment system. But not to worry, the government is implementing a plan of quantitative easing.
Yeah, which means they just created lots and lots of money.
Well, they didn't say that, did they? I mean, can you imagine if they'd said, don't worry, we're going to go and print loads of money. I mean, we might have had a different reaction from the electorate. You know, my mother's not financially literate, like in terms of in a sophisticated way, but she would understand what it meant by printing money. Printing money leads to a huge amount of inflation. And of course, in COVID, 20% of all US dollars in the world in 1 year were printed. And of course, no wonder we have inflation.
And we had 20% inflation directly as a result from that. If you go to buy a cheeseburger or a burrito, which we introduced you to good American burritos, you call them wraps, but you like them. You ordered one yesterday, I saw. The prices are up at least 20%.
It was the first time I realized that the money in the bank isn't necessarily risk-free, although the government, as you said, backs it. There is no money in the bank by design. And that money depreciates in ways that are completely outside of my control. And I just thought, that's not fair. We should have, and as you've discussed before, equal weights and measures. If I earn work hard and I earn money, that money should not depreciate. We have even central bankers admitting that they're targeting 2.5% inflation. Therefore, they're going to, it's a tax on our money. And
nope.
yet, it's the biggest tax that is never discussed. And of course, some people have bigger inflation rates than each other, you know, and normally it's the least well off, as we've discussed, that are being affected most by this. And so I thought, well, what do we do about this? And I learned that gold had been money for thousands of years. It had always been money, had backed the dollar and everything. And then all the problems had started in 1971 when we temporarily came off the gold standard. I thought, well, we can't rely on governments. We can't rely on central banks. We've got to take our destiny into our own hands. We've got to have sovereign money. Why don't we just have our own personal gold standard? Why? And you know, the problem, of course, is, as many would jump to the conclusion, well, you can't use gold as money. The crypto community, which I have a lot of, you know, not sympathy with, a lot of, you know, I like what they're trying to do with Bitcoin.
They see the same problem.
Yeah, they see the same problem.
A little different solution, yeah. But it's a technological solution.
Satoshi came up with Bitcoin, and I thought, well, why don't we just enable gold in electronic payments? Why don't we do that? I thought, I reckon I can do that. You know, my delusional faith in myself, that we could find a way. And so I set off to do that. That was I started having the idea in 2008. Took a long time to work out how the actual payment system works. I mean, I understood how the internet worked, electronic programming software, but I didn't understand actually how MasterCard works, how bank payments work. That was a little bit of a journey.
And it's not just technological. There are a lot of rules associated with that. There's a lot of societal pressures that create a need for MasterCard to work a certain way. But those are the financial rails, and they're the ones that most people in the world are using.
Yeah,
in the developed world.
But I was told I wouldn't be able to do it, technically. I was told I wouldn't be allowed to do it. But, you know, you've got to push past these things and believe what you can do. And I just knew deep down it was important. And I knew it was going to be a big lift. But I kind of just thought that, well, I don't want to be on my deathbed thinking, what if? What if I had done that? And it's become, unfortunately, in some ways, because it is very stressful, a bit of a vocation. Vocation is a strong word. If you look it up, it's a kind of compelling, undeniable compulsion to get something done, and I think that's what's, you know, helped me get through all the challenges that we've had. But today,
and it's a mission. It's a mission based on biblical principles. So I mean, you grew up with a healthy reverence for God and the role that God plays in that was in your schooling and everything else. But it's a mission because you see the unfairness.
Yeah.
Of money when the government can create it out of nothing and literally do whatever programs that they want at the same time, make certain people rich and other people poor.
Yeah, I felt it. You know, as I said, I was born in the northeast of England. It's nearly the furthest part away from London you can get where the money's created. It's in the northeast, right near Scotland. And I was quite creative, innovative technology guy. And yet, I struggled to succeed. You know, I moved closer to London. I was in Manchester. That's where I went to university, and that's where I set my first company up, Visuality. And yet, there I was trying to develop this new e-commerce stuff. And you know, I might charge £100,000, whereas someone in London was charging £1 million back in the early 90s or the late 90s. And this is crazy, you know. And yet, that because they were closest to the money supply, and they were able to benefit from that. So I feel like I've viscerally in my bones felt the Cantillon effect, and it's not fair, you know. And our vision is a world where everyone has an equal opportunity to prosper. Now that doesn't mean you will, but it needs to be a level playing field. And therefore, our mission is to deliver a reliable form of gold currency to the world to that end.
And if you don't do that, the risk is you have Mamdani in New York who says we've got to turn to socialism, which is equally shared misery. Or you have the French Revolution, where they said we're going to take all the rich people and literally chop their heads off with a guillotine.
And the wealth gap hasn't been as big since as it was in the French Revolution. We've now got back to the same wealth gap that they had,
which is going to lead to very bad outcomes, and they're unbiblical outcomes. The biblical outcome is you respect another person's property, but give me my fair opportunity to earn mine for my family and my future. And gold allows that, because if your money just disappears every year, 5, 10, 20%, which has happened in a lot of economies and could happen here with $37 trillion in debt. You know, it's that store of value. Money's three things. It's a unit of account, a means of exchange, and a store of value. And U.S. dollar is a very good unit of account, and it's a very good means of exchange, but it's a terrible store of value because even the central banks say we want to devalue that at least 2 to 3% per year. So you've come up with a solution, and your technology is great. I use it all the time. I walk in and demonstrate it. It's very, very useful. I buy dinner with it. I can buy gold. I sit and buy $10 worth of gold. And that, I think, is very, very important, is the average person has access to gold that they might never have access to other than Glint.
And, you know, the time when you least expect it, you can just pull out your debit card and pay for that medical emergency or jump in that Lyft car, as I did the other day. And they wanted $31.52. I paid with 0.27 grams of gold.
Yeah. No. And this is important because you might get a bonus at work. And in your bonus at work, let's say it's $5,000 and you say, yeah, I'll go buy a gold coin at Costco. But could you spend that money? All right, we're talking with Jason Cousins. We're talking about Glint. It is the future of money, and we'll be right back, and we'll dive into what the future of money will look like. Join us after the break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
I'm talking with the great Jason Cousins, the founder and CEO of Glint, which is bringing the future of money to us. It's allowing for liberty, security, and values. If money is controlled in a central bank digital currency, thank goodness President Trump has outlawed it, but it could come back, and almost every nation on the planet is developing a central bank and digital currency, which is literally a control mechanism. It's unlimited, so you'll have inflation with it. It has control so that they can mandate who gets what, when, how long, when you can spend it, if the money expires or if it doesn't expire, when it's good, what you can buy with it. So all of those things are evil. But gold was designed by God. It comes when two neutron stars collide. God created it. It is immutable. It will last. You know, you read in the Bible and talk about things that are going to disappear. So much of the heaven and earth will burn, but gold doesn't burn up. What it does is it gets purified by fire. And so what's going to happen is that in heaven, we have gold streets. Gold outlasts the earth according to biblical truth. And so gold is, but it's not anything it's something that you should honor over a human being. It's not anything you should honor. It is a thing. It's money. It's God's money, and it has been since the dawn of man, and in every society on earth, it's been used as money. Even it's ingrained in us. The Olympics have gold, silver, and bronze, which is gold, silver, and copper, and gold is always considered the finest. Now, Glint is an amazing thing you've built because you can get gold and silver in Glint, and I can go right now on my app, I've got it right here, and I can buy whatever at the spot price. How does it work?
Well, look, you just simply go to your favorite app store, Google or Apple App Store, you download the Glint Pay app, search for Glint Pay, download the app. It takes a few minutes, that's all, to register. We have to work within the regulatory system, so we need to know who you are, as also just protect your gold as well. Once you've entered that information, you get approved, and you're inside the Glint. You've got a Glint account. It's like a banking app. But of course, with this, you can buy some gold or silver. You can buy $10 worth of gold or silver. You can buy millions of dollars. It depends how much money you've got. We believe in a world where everyone has an equal opportunity to prosper. That will always be the case. And then, of course, you've got a Glint card, which you can order. Actually, if you type in gold 247 into the referral code today, you'll actually be able to get the card free, which is worth about $10. And then you can link your card to your gold wallet. So that means when you can actually spend your gold anywhere, almost anywhere in the world where MasterCard's accepted. And I've used this card to pay for things in Texas, in lots of states across America, Florida, at 35,000 feet in the air to pay for my Wi-Fi in Tokyo, in Mumbai, and in London. We've enabled gold in electronic payments.
Yeah, no, I've used it to buy a copy of my book, Pirate Money. Yeah. I just wanted to test it out, but I've taken people to dinner with it. It is extraordinarily useful. It's making gold money again. And the beauty of it is that it functions just exactly like money God intended.
Yeah.
It maintains its purchasing power over time. It fluctuates. It can go down.
Yes,
it can go up. But it's over the long term, maintain its purchasing power. It really is all three things money's supposed to be: unit of account, means of exchange, and store of value. And this technology has opened it up. Now, it has a couple of drawbacks. First off, ignore the drawbacks for now. For me, I'm like, I don't care if I have to pay a capital gains tax. I only have to pay that if I have a gain. And so if my gold goes up in value relative to U.S. dollar, yes, every time I spend it, I've created a capital gain and I will have to report. I hate doing that, but it's still, I keep, you know, the vast majority, 2/3 to 3/4 of that I get to keep.
Yeah.
And I have to give, you know, Caesar his quarter. But we're working on state laws that would eliminate that by making gold and silver as money at the state level. Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution says state can make nothing other than gold and silver legal tender. You traveled with us, and we met with legislators who were initially very skeptical. And so we went into Tennessee, we went into Georgia, we went into Florida, we've been in Utah together, we've been in Oklahoma, we've been around the Texas, around the country talking with legislators, and they're like, yeah, I don't know how that would work. And then you pull out your Glint card and show them, and they're like, oh,
yeah,
we could do that. And you, in fact, you were part of the 2024 precious metal study that Utah published that says it's legal, it's constitutional, it works.
Yeah, I mean, that felt for me like that was a privilege for me to be able to help the cause, so to speak, by demonstrating how easy it was to implement. Because it's understandable how state legislators and bureaucrats would have just scratched their heads, which they were doing, going, what are you talking about making gold and silver money? I mean, you can't possibly do that. I mean, what are you talking about? We live in an electronic world.
Yeah, but you made it electronic. And so really, all it is ownership exchange. So if I have gold and you have something you want to sell me, you want to sell me your economic war room mug there,
yeah,
and I have gold and I want to pay for it, we just have to decide what it's worth. Well, you price it in U.S. dollars, and you say, well, I want $10 for this mug.
Yeah.
And I can go on my app, and I could give you MasterCard, $10, to pay for that mug, and it will tell me exactly how much gold that is, and that gold will come out of my account and go into your account.
Yeah, actually, it was quite funny. A couple of years ago, I was in a London cab. You know, we've got these black cabs, famous black cabs in London, and I get in the cab, and I said to the taxi driver, can you take me to this hotel? I've got, but first, can we go home? I need to go to my house and pick up my black tie dinner suit. He said, yeah, no problem. He goes, so what are you doing at this hotel? I said, oh, I'm going to a FinTech Awards. FinTech Awards? What's FinTech then? I said, you know, it's like some of these like neobanks and things like Revolut and Monzo and Robinhood and things like this. He goes, oh, yeah. He says, I've got one for you. He goes, Glint.
Glint, the one you started.
Yeah, and he tells me all about Glint, which of course I knew all about as the founder. And I found it very charming, but really fascinating and interesting. He actually did a great pitch to me. And at the end of it, I told him who I was. And I did pay him in gold. Because with the Glint MasterCard, whenever I pay with that, the merchant has no idea I'm paying with gold. In the same way that if you travel to France, seeing that keeps coming up all the time, we'll pick France. And you pay, you know, you had your...
Can we go to Fiji instead?
Let's go to Italy.
Okay.
Let's go to Italy and we'll go to Italy and pay for something there. You might pay very well, pay with your American debit or credit card. But of course, you're paying with dollars. But the merchant in Italy is getting euros. And there's a real-time exchange from your dollars into euros. And that's what happens with Glint. When you present your debit card, a request, an authorization request comes from the merchant. It goes through the system, goes through their bank, it goes through the MasterCard network, and it comes. We're fully integrated with MasterCard. We're what's called a principal MasterCard member. And we get the request. And so we look at see how much gold you've got. We see what the real-time price of gold is. And then we authorize the transaction if you've got enough gold. And then we sell just enough gold in order into the currency of the merchant, and that winds its way to the merchant. That process of authorization has to happen within 200 milliseconds.
Wow.
And that includes the time it takes to go from the merchant through the internet to us and then back again as well. So we actually have very few milliseconds to make this all up. So we've built our own technology to be able to do that.
And I know it works. I mean, we went together. We dined at the original Chick-fil-A restaurant just outside Atlanta Airport.
Yeah.
The Dwarf House is what it's called. And we told the waitress, we'll pay you in gold. And she didn't believe it. And so I pulled my Glint card out and paid for it and said, wow. She said, I wish the Cathy family would pay me in gold. I said, well, we're working on that.
Yeah.
Because when we get this passed and you helped us with the state laws, people can pick what percentage of their salary they want to be paid in gold, silver, or U.S. dollars. We're not replacing the dollar. We're just giving an alternative to it and say, I want to be paid in gold. And then they can pay in gold. And there will be. I talked he's running for comptroller here in Texas, Don Huffines. And if he's in comptroller, he'll be in charge of the laws we've passed. We've already passed it in Arkansas, Florida, Louisiana, Texas, and Missouri. And if he wins the comptroller, then he'll be able to oversee the system. But I can pull my Glint card and go into Huffines and buy an automobile at Huffines, a Chevy, or whatever Huffines dealership I walk into. And he could say, I don't want you to transfer it into U.S. dollars. I just as soon have the gold.
That's right. Once this legislation's passed, you won't have to use the Glint card. You could just say, I'm going to send you the gold instead. It's called peer-to-peer, from my account to yours, like doing a bank transfer. And the gold ownership moves from me to you. And actually, that's already available in other countries around the world with Glint. It's just that we haven't enabled it in the U.S. yet. But now we're going to be doing that over the next year.
Well, here's the exciting part. You can get on the personal gold or silver standard right now today, if that's what you're interested. You can learn more at glintpay.com/gold247. You can do that, but we will also be working on adding these additional features to where it could be state-based currency, where you might not have to pay a capital gains tax. You might have the gold stored not in Switzerland like it is now, but have it stored in your state or an adjacent state. And then you could have it to where it's peer-to-peer. So the retailers, you get paid in gold, you can pay in gold, and you could have literally a societal gold standard as an option. And you've made that possible. You're the Elon Musk of making this possible. People drive electric cars because Elon Musk had the foresight to build one that was useful. And you've had the foresight to find a way to make gold useful as money again. So congratulations to you, Jason.
Well, Kevin, thank you. But of course, it couldn't have happened without the great work you guys have been doing in building this huge momentum across all these states. It's been quite a privilege to witness what you've been doing. It's absolutely incredible. Just to talk about that domain name, by the way, it's partner.glintpay.com/gold247. And if you just go straight to the App Store, you can download the app and just type in gold247 in the referral code. That's the other way to do it.
If you want to learn more, that's the way to do it. All right. I want to just thank you, Jason, for coming from London to bring us back in America, back to a gold standard. That's what our Constitution requires. And you've shown us how to do it in a practical and sensible way. And this is an opportunity for us to get back to honest weights and measures. And you do what's best for you and your family. But if you're interested, go and learn more from Glint Pay. But you also need to be praying. The poorest among us are being harmed by inflation. We need to pray for America to return to God's principles, God's money, and so forth. Pray for us. And listen wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's on Apple or Spotify or so forth. This is Kevin Freeman. I'm joined by Jason Cousins from London for Pirate Money Radio.